Running down dogma with his karma. This is the Drew Marshall Show.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again.
You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're live right here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. Thank you for tuning in. I've enjoyed today's show. Tim, have you?
It's been a great show.
Started off with some...
hung up on us.
No one hung up on us? That's the litmus test for whether this is a good show or not.
A good day is not being 6 feet under the ground, right?
That is. Arun Gandhi is the grandson of V. Gandhi. And last week, Arun Gandhi represented Tribe Hindu during our Soul Survivor contest. I don't like calling it a contest. What else do you call it? Game show? No.
A freak show attraction?
Yeah, that's
a
much better.
Car wreck?
Yeah. But we really didn't have much of an opportunity to actually get to know the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. So this week, I have invited Mr. Gandhi back on the show for a personal one-on-one interview. You know why? Because it's my show.
Darn right.
I get to do what I want. Mr. Gandhi, thank you again for your time and your patience with me, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me back.
I have about 47 questions to ask you. Are you ready?
All right.
The first question is, do you realize that when you were on our show last week, January 30th, what that date was?
Yes, I do.
Do you realize that
never forget that date.
Do you realize that we made no mention of it when we had you on the show?
Well, I wasn't sure whether you realized it, and I didn't want to embarrass anybody, so I just let it be.
Listen, the Drew Marshall Show actually is Greek for embarrassment. That's what this is. The whole show is me embarrassing myself. 68 years ago, last Saturday, when you were on our show, your grandfather was assassinated. And I watched some documentaries, some footage. Of course, I watched the scene from the movie, Gandhi. And wow. I mean, it's a day that will live in infamy. Of course, your grandfather had an impact on his world, never really realizing the impact he would have on the world. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was very humble, and he just did what he had to do, and he didn't think about the impact. He was hoping that people would understand and just learn from his life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he called the story of his life, My Experiments with Truth.
What a book. You were 14 when your grandfather died. Is that correct?
Yes.
I wonder what your life would be like had you not lived in the shadows of his name.
Well, I don't know. I did feel a little pressure when I was a teenager. And I expressed this to my mother, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to go through life with this legacy, which is already becoming a burden. And my mom told me, she said, it's entirely up to you. If you consider this legacy to be a burden, it's just going to get heavier and heavier as the years go by. But if you consider this legacy to be a light that is illuminating the path ahead for you, it'll be easier for you to deal with. So since then, I've been seeing this legacy as a light that is showing me the path.
Hmm. Wow. Is there anyone in your family that is not aboard the peace train? In other words, do you have any relatives who have felt the burden of living with the name Gandhi and have gone the other way?
know, there are some people who have just decided to pursue a normal career, and so they become professors and teaching and so on. And some people who have been activists. So we have both. Mm-hmm.
Your grandfather is not a hero to everyone, apparently. And I read an article recently that said Hindu hardliners in India, emboldened perhaps by the sweeping national election victory last year of, now I'm not sure when this article was written, but the pro-Hindu nationalist party, the BJP, are increasingly vocal in criticizing Gandhi. They accuse him of having betrayed Hindus by being too pro-Muslim, and even for the division of India and the bloodshed that marked partition. That, of course, was the belief of the man who assassinated your grandfather.
No, that's an excuse they are making now. The real fact of the matter is that they hated Gandhi because he wanted to do away with the caste system. He said no religion should have any kind of prejudice attached to it, and that is not religion. And so he wanted the caste system, which defines people as low caste and oppresses them, to be abolished completely. And this party is made up of mostly the two upper castes, and especially the highest caste, the Brahmins. And they felt threatened that if Gandhi was successful in getting rid of the caste system, then our position would be diluted. And so they decided before he does anything like that, to assassinate him and be done with him. And so they used that excuse of partition. Gandhi, in fact, didn't want partition. He said, I'm willing to wait for another 10 years if necessary, but I want one country. I don't want my country to be divided. The rest of the leadership, they were getting too old, and they were getting in a hurry to get into positions of power, and so they went behind his back and they accepted partition. So he wasn't wrong. He wasn't one for partition. So all this blame now, they conveniently put it on him because there's nobody there to defend him.
You know, not to compare Gandhi with Jesus, because who would do such a crazy thing like that? But Jesus was executed for socio-political reasons. That's what they said, when the reality is that Jesus was executed because he said to hell with religion.
Yeah.
And
that's what we do is we eliminate them, put them on pedestals and worship them, but not follow them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But do you see, Tim, do you see that parallel?
No, absolutely. And I know that, you know, from what I understand, is Gandhi was inspired by the nonviolence of Jesus, as in turn Martin Luther King was inspired by Gandhi.
I get that.
No, but I'm saying there is that connection. There is that interesting connection as well.
Sure. He was actually executed because he wanted to get rid of the of religion.
Yes.
He wanted to get rid of a caste system. That religion...
Oh, for sure, the Pharisees comes along,
exactly,
above everybody else.
And Gandhi was executed for the same thing. That is, I just find that uncanny.
It is.
Just going on the peace theme for a second, Mr. Gandhi, first of all, what does a peace farmer actually do? Because that's you. What does that mean? What do you do?
Well, I plant, my grandfather used to say that all that you can do is plant seeds in the minds of people, talk to them about nonviolence, explain to them about nonviolence, and how to live it. Beyond that, I can't do much. People have to think about it and accept it, and then change will come. But it's like a farmer. If a farmer goes and plants seeds and hopes and prays that he gets a good crop. So in the same way, I go and plant seeds of nonviolence in the minds of people, and I hope and pray that eventually there will be a good crop and everybody will understand the importance of living a nonviolent lifestyle.
Okay, so this isn't going to be the first time you've had this conversation about nonviolence and pacifism, but I want to, let's just explore this. Just be patient with me, because I'm going to be like, many of the university students, I'm sure, come up to you and want to argue this or try to figure this out.
Sure.
But is there not ever a reason to pick up arms or to answer a call to defend? Do you not think that tyranny and evil, if left unchecked, would not take over the world?
Well, certainly. Until we are able to create a perfect world where everybody can live in harmony without fighting and killing each other, until then, yes, we do need certain, protection. But we go overboard on that.
Mm.
Resolving conflicts, we want to eliminate conflicts, and so we just eliminate the person, thinking that by eliminating the person, we are eliminating conflict. But we are not. All the wars that we have fought and all the violence that we continue to practice, we focus on the person instead of the conflict or on the problem. And so the problems festers, and we eliminate each other in the process. Take an example of World War II. We fought World War II. We sacrificed the lives of at least 60 million people and to eliminate Nazism. But Nazism is still thriving. That hate and prejudice is still there. All we did was eliminate Hitler and his army. But that philosophy that they believed in still thrives all over the world. So what did we sacrifice 60 million people for?
Yeah. I've shared this on the show a number of times, but a few years ago I was in Israel filming a television show, and we spent some time at they call it Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem, and of course beside that is the Children's Memorial. And I remember walking out of that building weeping in anger. It was, one of those ugly cries.
Yeah.
You need a lot of Kleenex, that kind of,
what we need to do is to go and see. I went to the Holocaust Museum myself, both in Israel as well as in Washington, D.C. and in L.A. So I've seen that. I've read about it. And I've also cried every time I see it, and but I cry not out of anger at what Hitler did. I cry at the depths to which we human beings have been reduced in hating people so much. It's not just Hitler who did this and we eliminated him. We are doing this all the time on a smaller scale with each other.
Yeah.
We hate each other, we eliminate each other, there's so much of prejudice in the world today.
You said you cried because of your disgust or frustration with mankind, and I cried because of my disgust and frustration with God. Because, apparently this was...
Well, that's another thing, you see. We want a scapegoat.
Yeah.
We don't want to take our responsibility on ourselves. And we want a scapegoat, so we find God, and we can't define God, so we say, well, God is responsible for all this, and we forget about it. There is no such thing as God is responsible for it. We are responsible for what we make of our life. All the things that we do to one another is our responsibility. It's not God who's making us do these things. God didn't teach us to hate people. Religion is about loving people. But what we do with religion is we teach people to hate. We teach people that our religion is best, and follow our religion, and all the other religions are dirt. And forget about them. We start all those things in religion. We start it at home. when we, as parents, tell our children, beware of certain people, they are bad people, and you know, we start that whole process of hating from home. So let's not blame it on God and say that God is responsible for all this. God is not responsible.
I think I just got my butt kicked by Gandhi's grandson.
Yes, you did, and we have record of it. I'm going to put it on a loop.
How do you feel about this sentence, Mr. Gandhi? The only hope for peace in the Middle East is for civilians to march and be slaughtered.
Well, yes, certainly that is part of the whole philosophy of nonviolence. When Gandhi marched, he told people, be prepared to die. Don't think that this is a nonviolent struggle and therefore nobody is going to kill you. They are going to kill you because the establishment wants to control. They want to keep control of it. And they're going to kill you and they're going to do everything. So you got to be prepared to die. When we send soldiers out into the field to fight a war, they go there prepared to die. They don't go there, you know, in the hope of coming back again.
Yeah, they have a realistic expectation that they could die.
Yeah. And so when you go into battle, any kind of battle, you are going to be ready to die there. And if you have that courage and that bravery and are willing to die for your country or for the safety of your family, then do it nonviolently. Because violently, if you kill each other, destroy each other, you're not going to really gain anything from it.
What?
But if you want a change,
yeah,
then be willing to die, but not to kill.
Who is today's Gandhi?
There isn't one yet. I haven't come across one.
So from the time your grandfather was assassinated to today, 68 years later, there hasn't been really another Gandhi.
Well, there have been people who practice some of his philosophies, like Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, and several others, Lech Walesa, and you know, there are dozens of people who received the Nobel Peace Prize in the name of Gandhi. But Gandhi himself never got a Nobel Peace Prize. So there are lots of them, but I say partly, you know, they practice part of his philosophy because they only, like here, Martin Luther King used it for civil rights for his people, but then because he was assassinated, early, the struggle remained incomplete, and nobody followed through and completed the struggle. So we still continue to have those prejudices and hate, although we don't have the you know, the visual manifestations of prejudices.
Mm-hmm. Folks, we are on the phone with Arun Gandhi, of course, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. Mr. Gandhi, your grandfather's influences, some of his greatest influences, were people like Plato and Tolstoy, if I understand things correct.
Yeah.
Who?
Tolstoy, Plato, Thoreau, they all influenced him in some way or the other.
And who are your influences?
Mostly my grandfather. And then I just learn from everybody, from children, from everybody that I come across, from you, from this dialogue that we are having.
Oh, buddy, you're in trouble now.
Yeah, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel if you're looking for help here.
My thing is that we are constantly learning every moment of our lives, every person we meet, every incident we experience, every dialogue that we have, it's a learning experience.
Right.
If you have an open mind, then you learn from it. But if your mind is shut, then you don't learn anything. Then the whole experience goes waste.
Is there anything about your grandfather's philosophy that you disagree with?
Nothing really serious kind of disagreement. One aspect that I have not been able to understand so far yet is that he said during his lifetime that even one person who is a true believer in nonviolence can go out into the street and defy the law, defy unjust laws. And my experience with what my dad did that in South Africa, when he couldn't convince all the non-white people to join him, he went on his own and protested against apartheid. And then the government decided that he is one man, just let him be. Let him do whatever he wants to and we don't arrest him. So in that way, I think in some sense, all his efforts were wasted and the government didn't do anything one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Just ignored him.
Well, you know, that actually brings me to another point. Had Gandhi just been ignored, your grandfather, and not assassinated, even. So ignored and not assassinated, I wonder if your grandfather would have become the legend he has become.
Well, if he had been ignored all his life, then he wouldn't have been what he is. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about
him
60 years after his death. But it was not his assassination that made him immortal. It was the work that he did that made him immortal, the work for which he sacrificed his life.
I need to, let's just go to 2003 when I believe you were one of the signatories to Humanism and Its Aspirations, the Humanist Manifesto, number 3, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So what does Arun Gandhi say that a Hindu is? What does Arun Gandhi say that a humanist is? And what does Arun Gandhi say that a universalist is? Because apparently you're all three.
Yeah, I am everybody. I am, for Muslims, I am a Muslim. For Christians, I am a Christian. For Hindus, I am a Hindu. I respect everybody. I love everybody. I respect all religions and I've always looked, like my grandfather said, that religion is like climbing a mountain. Why should it matter to anybody which side of the mountain one chooses to climb up from? So I respect all different philosophies and different religions. And I do my own thing. I pray, and yesterday somebody asked me how often or how long do you pray every day? How many hours a day do you pray? I said every 24 hours of the day I'm praying. Hmm. My communication with God is constant. So, it's all a matter of personal choice.
When the movie, I read this and I just want to make sure it's true, because you never know whether it's true just because you read it. When the movie about
as far as his philosophy and his life is concerned, it was very true. But those who looked at it as a historic documentary,
right. They
were disappointed, because then it wasn't meant to be a historic documentary.
Right.
It was all about his life and his personality.
But you wrote an article condemning India's $25 million investment in it, stating that this money could have been used better. And then after viewing the movie, you retracted your original statement? Is that true?
Yeah, I did. When I saw the movie, I was moved by it to such an extent that I realized that this movie alone is going to bring Gandhi to more people around the world, mm-hmm. than all the books that have been written on him. So today, if we are sitting here talking about him 60 years later, it's not because you have read the book or his books, but it's because you were influenced by that movie.
That's true. That's very true. Well, tell me about that day, last Saturday, 68 years ago. You were 14. Where were you when your grandfather was assassinated?
We had just gone back to South Africa. You know, from the age of 12 to 14, I lived with grandfather in India. And he taught me some very important and valuable lessons. And, you know, that really later changed the course of my life. And after that wonderful time I had with grandfather, my parents decided it was time to go back to South Africa and resume their work there. So in November of 1947, after India became independent, we moved to back to South Africa, and he was assassinated 2 months later.
And how did you find the news? How did you find out?
Well, it, you know, we lived on this farm, which was very isolated. It was the community that grandfather had started called Phoenix. And we didn't have any communications or radio or anything, just one of those old-fashioned telephone calls, you know, where everybody was on a party line, kind of thing. And somebody in the city heard the news on the radio, and they called my my mom was alone at home. I was at school with my younger sister. She was at school with me. And my dad had gone to town to attend a conference. And so they called home, and my mom was there. And they asked her about this, and she said, I didn't know. You know, she had not heard anything.
No.
And so when she, when they gave her the news, she just broke down. And started crying, and of course, you know, the phone was ringing off the hook after that.
Mm-hmm.
And
but who told you? She sent for you at the school?
Yeah, she sent for me at the school, and when this person came and said, "You go home quickly. Your mom needs you, and I'm going to bring your sister." I was puzzled. I didn't, you know, I couldn't imagine what would go wrong that she would ask me to come home so quickly.
Sure.
So I ran that mile home, 1 mile through the sugarcane fields, and she told me what the news was, and I was just stunned. For nearly 10, 15 minutes, I was in such shock that I couldn't say anything or do anything.
Wow. You paint quite a picture. And I want to thank you for coming back on the show the very next week. So you were on our show last week, our sole survivor, who we're going to chat with in just a little bit, Ryan. Ryan's been processing some tough stuff. And so we're going to get him on the phone and just check in with him, see how he's doing. But then I thought, you know, I have so many more questions myself that I wanted to ask, and I sheepishly phoned you and wondered about if you'd join us again the following week, and you said yes, graciously. So thank you, Mr. Gandhi, for coming back on our show 2 weeks in a row like this. It's been an honor.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts.
Well, one of these days, I think you should co-host our show. What do you think? The website is arungandhi.org, arungandhi.org, and that's who we've been chatting with, Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. Sir, I wish you the best. I hope you have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you.
We'll speak again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now I
been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come.